everyone. It's Christina Herrick, produce editor with The Packer, here again with another Tip of the Iceberg podcast. In this episode, I talk with Colin Rocco, founder and CEO of Advanced Agriscience, about his research into frost protection. Thanks for joining me, Colin.
Thanks, Christina. It's great to chat again, and thank you for having me and for giving me this opportunity. My name's Dr. Colin Rocco. I'm from British Columbia, Canada, and I'm the founder and CEO of Advanced Agriscience, where we're developing my PhD research into frost-protecting biopesticides so growers can more efficiently protect their crops and improve production with lower costs.
Well, thank you for that. Obviously in my intro, I alluded a little bit to your research, but I'm glad you kind of talked a little bit more about it, because you know, that's when we talked pre-interview, I mentioned how this was interesting to me. And obviously you had won an award for the research that you're doing. So, you know, why don't we start with just the basics? Like, why is frost damage such an issue? Obviously, as you're probably aware, the growers on the East Coast and probably eastern part of Canada as well are a little nervous. It's pretty warm here, and things are moving faster than maybe they should. So, you know, let's talk about that at the base level. Why is frost damage such an issue in produce?
Yeah, I actually just got an email the other day from the ministry in Ontario about their concerns this upcoming season for their tree fruits. So frost damage, it really harms produce by causing ice crystals to form within the tissue, rupturing the cell structure. And, you know, this can lead to wilting, discoloration, loss of quality, reducing the market value, reducing the yields, impacting production and supply, and ultimately it can also just kill the crop. So, for example, late spring frost after an early bloom in some regions, you know, like clockwork, wreak havoc on the tree fruits and a broad variety of produce, really. And, you know, we're seeing this right now in a lot of areas in Canada and the U.S., where these early warmer temperatures are leading to early budding. And, you know, if temperatures just dip back down to where frost can form, it can really cause a lot of damage and wipe out those crops.
Yeah. And, you know, the other part that I think is really interesting is, in the question I sent you, I said complicated. What makes frost damage so prevention so complicated? But, you know, I think about just like I was explaining it to my team, and, you know, obviously why I'm a little concerned about the temperatures here on the East Coast, and just what that means. But, you know, frost damage, when I think about it, and frost damage prevention, is that there are only a few options. There's a few things you can do, but I know a lot of it depends on the temperature and things like that. So, you know, why don't you share with me, because obviously you've done research on frost damage and frost prevention. So why is it so complicated? What options are out there, and kind of like, why is it such a difficult thing to solve?
Yeah, there's just so many variables and challenges that come into play, things beyond a grower's control. So, you know, mostly the unpredictable weather patterns and also crop sensitivities, depending on their developmental stages or budding. Now, on top of the weather, it's just the sheer amount of financial cost and resources required for protection as well. The equipment, infrastructure, water, fuel, labor, the resources and cost just add up. And when we look at the systems in use today, they're just quite inefficient and wasteful. Some areas still burn fires within the crops, you know, no different than the ancient Romans did 2,000 years ago. Methods like sprinklers can backfire if the temperatures drop too low. Frost fans are expensive, and protective covers need to be carefully timed. So even just finding the labor to place and remove those covers has directly led to a lot of crop losses here in Canada. Some of the main methods in use, you know, there's irrigation, those frost fans, heaters, smoke machines, smudge pots, burning candles in the crops. You know, a lot of places in Europe, in Italy, France, they just line up candles in their vineyards and burn them. And it looks really pretty at night, but it's really inefficient, and it takes a lot of labor to place and light them. Helicopters as well, and frost covers. But there hasn't really been much innovation. They've pretty much fundamentally stayed unchanged. They really just aim to warm the plants or really dispel the cold air, really treating the symptoms and not the cause of the frost.
Yeah, and where you are in British Columbia, I think a lot about a lot of the growers in the tree fruit region, and just how a lot of times like orchards or fruit growing areas are right next to properties because property prices are so high, and a lot of places in that fruit growing region are vacation homes. And so, if people are, if they're running helicopters, sometimes, they run the helicopters obviously during cherry season to keep them drying and things like that. But when they run it for frost protection too, that's obviously a disruption. Usually it's at times that are inconvenient. And so, there are issues with deploying those types of frost protections, and smudge pots are obviously outruled and are outlawed in a lot of places. So yeah, it seems like you've either got your blowers to try to mitigate and break up the air, but there's not really, like you said, there's not really a whole lot of new inventions. And so that's kind of what's neat about having this conversation is when I came across your research, you're doing some research to find new solutions. So tell me about it. Tell me about your research and what you've learned along the way with frost damage and frost prevention.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out after reading about our research. I really appreciate that. And my research really focused on understanding and mitigating frost damaging crops. So I delved into the molecular genetics of low temperature stress and frost tolerance, really exploring the exact mechanisms by which frosts form through ice nucleation. But more importantly, how to combat that frost formation, including genes critical for survival in plants and the metagenomics of cold stress systems. So what that means is just looking at the plant microbiomes, what's going on in the microbes in response to low temperatures. Then taken together, this work really laid the foundation for advanced agri science, which after I finished grad school at Queen's, I moved back home to BC to begin and try and develop my research further into commercially viable products for growers.
Yeah, so maybe tell me a little bit about why this research is important. Why is it different, or what makes it unique to what the overall issue of frost damage?
Right, so unlike all of today's technologies that really ignore the cause, like I mentioned earlier, we're really taking a different approach to frost. So our biopesticides, based on this research that we're developing, use microbes and protective proteins based on those critical genes for survival. And with this research, we can directly inhibit the cause of frost with molecular precision. So not just protecting against frost, but also trying to prevent it from ever even forming by reducing the incidence of those ice nucleation events. So our technology can do this with a three-pronged defensive strategy by inhibiting ice nucleating bacteria responsible for the frost, disarming their capabilities to actually form that frost, and also preventing ice crystals from causing damage to the cells. So it will allow growers to really protect their crops far more efficiently and sustainably for lower cost. Now, in practice, this will look like an inexpensive, easily stored, easily applied, shelf-stable, wettable powder, and it can be used for seed or spray treatment. So, just for example, a few days before frost conditions, a grower could just hop in their sprayer and spray it on their crops, and the biopesticides will colonize the plant tissue and provide passive protection so they can sleep better at night. But this is such an important issue because every year, just in the US alone, $1.5 billion in crops are lost to frost. That's more than any other weather-related hazard. And when we look at the trends with increasingly unpredictable weather patterns posing a growing threat to agricultural production, these costs are predicted to reach as high as $4 billion per year by 2050. Again, just in the US. And that's in USD too. I'm always switching between Canadian and USD. But that's US dollars. So, and this is just such a worldwide issue as well. Frost is everywhere. And then when we look at growing population too, just the sheer number of mouths to feed really further underscores the need for innovation to improve efficiencies and reduce costs for growers. And our technology has the potential to do this and to do it sustainably.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting to hear that frost is but caused by bacteria. Obviously, I don't have a degree in science. I have a degree in journalism, so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. But you know, I always thought it had something to, it was water, right? Expanding or contracting and you know, causing issues within the tree or the bloom or whatever the case might be. And I never really thought about it being bacteria. So it's fascinating that you're learning what the root cause of frost damage is, and then finding a way to then be able to treat it or protect the plant against it, which is just really fascinating. So let's talk about, oh, I think you were gonna see something.
Do you want me to add a bit onto the science there? Like, and do you want me to sort of answer that
Sure,
comment, and then
go
I guess it
ahead,
can
go get into
be
some of the
cut?
science here.
Okay. So basically, the way these really damaging frosts form that happen at high sub-zero in Celsius, just below 32 in Fahrenheit, these frosts form is that these ice nucleating bacteria can actually arrange water molecules to sort of mimic an ice crystal structure, to really sort of trick the water, you can think of it, into forming a crystal at these high sub-zero temperatures, these warm freezing temperatures. And that's how these damaging frosts can form. And these bacteria, they're really everywhere. They're found in the clouds, they're found in running water, in streams, on plants, in snow. They're pretty much everywhere. They're ubiquitous in nature. There was some brilliant work done by Dr. Steven Lindau out of UC Berkeley in the 80s to try and tackle frost with a similar approach using competitive exclusion to really sort of crowd out these ice nucleating bacteria in crops. And the technology worked, but this was in the 80s when these sort of this technology was sort of just emerging, and regulations and costs and a bunch of other issues just hampered the commercialization. So we're using new technology with a similar approach using biopesticides, but instead of competitive exclusion, we're trying to directly inhibit that bacteria and their abilities.
That's really neat. So, where are you with the technology? What are some of the next steps? I know I asked you this a couple months ago when we talked to set up an interview, but you know, I'm assuming that people listening to this conversation will be interested with what you're developing. You know, hopefully not needing to use it this year, but you never know. So, where are you with the product? Where are you with everything, and what should our readers know about the next steps?
So we've successfully completed the basic research components. Now we're working on the applied research, and we're doing this with the Institute for Sustainable Horticulture. And we're still really early in the development in the lab, trying to get these into commercially viable products. So next steps are to continue the work in the lab, get our research authorization from the regulatory agencies so we can do those crucial field trials and show growers the results. And we're aiming for those trials to catch early fall frost this year, optimistically, fingers crossed, or the late spring frost next year in 2025. We're looking at wine grapes, tree fruits first, but I welcome any growers of any crops who want to get involved and help with these trials. So some of the most important questions we still need to answer are when to apply, how long does it last for, and to what temperatures are they effective? And also, how long are they shelf stable for? And these are what we're working on to answer in the lab and during field trials, because these are things we just don't always translate perfectly from the lab to real world scenarios. So we still have a lot of work to do. And then to supplement our biopesticides, we're also working on sort of a geospatial web application to provide growers with location-based actionable intelligence on frost risk data, using historical weather data together with the forecast to create frost risk models and alerts to apply the biopesticides before, an impending frost event. And with this tool, we'd also like to be able to quantify emission abatements, water consumption reduction potentials, and cost savings, based on a grower's specific operation.
So, are you working just in Canada? Are you working in the US? What's kind of the thought process there?
So, in able to work in the US, we need permission from the EPA. I mean, it's really just a matter of cost if we can pay the fees. But right now we're working with the PMRA to trial in Canada, the labs in Canada. But I mean, if there's enough interest from growers in America who want to help trial, and we can afford the fees with the EPA, I'm 100% interested in trialing in the US as well.
Well, and it makes sense. I mean, you are a Canadian company, and there's plenty of tree fruit and grape wine grape growers in Canada that are have similar growing conditions to be able to, produce those kind of results that you want and to get that accurate study. So it makes sense, and I understand, maybe not wanting to go too far and unless you've got enough interest and support with the EPA. I understand. I've heard enough of about regulations to understand that, it makes sense. And, you obviously want to be able to use the data that you get in an actionable way. So you want to have a data set that's large enough to get a good feel for results, but not too large that it's overwhelming. So I understand that too. And I'm sure, as with any trial, you're going to start with a certain amount and then grow and expand and make sure that, test and double test just to make sure that the results are similar and that you're getting the same results across the country. So
Yeah, but the more data we can generate, the more replicability.
that's true.
That's the biggest part of science, just being able to repeat and replicate things. So,
Yeah.
I mean, if we can afford it and if there's interest, I'd love to test in the US as well.
Yeah, so what else should our readers slash listeners know about what you're developing and what you're working on?
I just want to reiterate that we're still early in development, and I'd really appreciate any input, any feedback, even just hearing experiences and stories with Frost from the listeners, so I can learn and better understand their perspectives to build the best product for them. Like Sean Sundberg said in your previous episode on February 22nd, I don't have a background in ag, so I'm doing my best, but I need help from growers to collaborate with to help support adoption when the time comes. We're also looking for growers who want to be involved, who want to be those early adopters and be the first to help us trial. So listeners can reach out from our website, agriSci.co, or on LinkedIn by searching Advanced AgriScience or myself. And if I could leave listeners with just one thing, it's that we're trying something new, and I can't wait to show what we can accomplish. And I hope that listeners are excited as I am, even if I do sound quite monotonous. And that with their help together, we can conquer Frost.
I think it's really exciting. I wish not for your sake, but I wish it wasn't a necessity. But I follow enough growers on social media to see the roller coaster that happens almost every year, and I feel like they need to pop so many antacids this time of year just because things are so up and down. And yes, there is a point where some frost damage can just serve as early thinning, but there's a certain amount of frost damage that is considered a total loss. And I think, that's your ultimate goal is to prevent those catastrophic losses and to really help the farmers have those profitable years and those years where, maybe this is one less thing they have to be worried about. There's so many things to think about throughout a growing season. So if you can mitigate one risk, that's a benefit to the whole industry.
Yeah, I just want to help. I just want to make a difference.
I just want to say a huge thank you again to Colin Urocco of Advanced AgriScience for joining me on the podcast to talk about his research and to talk about the future of frost protection. Obviously, as I said in my conversation, it's an interesting time to be talking about frost protection as we enter spring and bloom and all of the ups and downs that go with it. I also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, you can catch new episodes of Tip of the Iceberg on your favorite podcast platform like Google Play, Spotify, Apple, and more. And that's a wrap for this edition of Tip of the Iceberg, brought to you by the Packer and PMG Magazine. Join us again for more industry insights. Thanks so much. Bye.